It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I'm Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon. Having a great afternoon hanging out with y'all. He's hanging out on the golf course. He'll be there all weekend long, and I hope he has a very good time. He'll be back on Monday, of course. This is pretty scary. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, did I mention Treasury Secretary? Apparently said he really doesn't understand the spike in oil prices. Huh? Well, if you don't, who's supposed to? I don't know. Jeff Mordock is here, White House correspondent for the Washington Times. Jeff, I'm worried about that comment.
It's not a great comment. It's disturbing because I think most people also know why there's a spike in oil prices. It's because the Iran war in the Strait of Hormuz. It just seemed like he didn't want to come out and say it, and he didn't know what to do. So he pretended he just didn't know the answer to the question.
That's pretty funny. By the way, I hear you moved to my fair city.
I have. I am actually probably just not that far from you as I talk to you. And it's a great city. It's I love it here.
Well, if you love it here when it's 107, you'll love it in October. I'll tell you that. That's good.
Well, I love the heat is what I like. It's 107. I'm outside on the deck and it feels wonderful.
That's so funny. Well, that's great. Great to have you in Vegas. So talk to me a little bit. Let's start with this Natalie Harp thing. To me, it seems like just garbage and gossip. And I cannot believe that they're going after her and trying to cast aspersions on her employment. I mean, really, Trump's 80 years old. He's going to chase after this girl and risk his presidency. I mean, really, come on. Who believes that?
Oh, your phrase of garbage and gossip is the perfect two words to describe all this. This is completely ridiculous. The poor woman is a cancer survivor. I have actually dealt with her numerous times at the White House. She is one of the nicest, most helpful people you will deal with, which I cannot say that a lot about people in Washington, but that's been my personal experience. John Ossoff, he's vulnerable. He knows he's in trouble with Mike Collins. He's desperate. He wants to show that he can be a fighter because that's what the Democrats want. They say nobody's fighting for them. And he decided to go below the belt and try and position himself as a guy who's willing to go below the belt to go after Trump. That's what this is about. It's about saving his flailing campaign against Mike Collins. And we'll see what happens. But yes, it's innuendo. It's gossip. It's unfair. The poor woman is a cancer survivor. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. So where's the left? I mean, I understand the left's not going to defend this, but really, if you really cared about women like the left claims to, they would go, wait a minute, don't be assuming that because, and Trump, let's be honest, Trump likes pretty things around him. He doesn't have ugly women on his staff in any way, right? He likes pretty things, but that doesn't mean you're not qualified.
No, that's 100% right. To your point, if you go into, so in the White House, when you're a reporter, there's a section called lower press, where it's young women who help reporters, they answer questions, they get you press releases, all that. Most of those women are our former beauty pageant queens in some way. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine joked with me that Trump should change his slogan to Make America Hot Again. So,
right. That's the whole point. You go back to D.C., you see that all over the place. So it's just, frankly, it's ridiculous, the whole idea. So now Ossoff, obviously, I mean, is this going to do anything for his campaign, do you think?
I think it bought him some attention for a little bit. But, you know, come November, October, when people want to talk about the real issues, is anybody going to remember this? There's not a lot of news going on right now. It's a slow August. You know, the president's been wrapped up with the Iran war, so he hasn't been releasing a lot of new initiatives, at least at the rate he was. And this buys him some temporary airtime, but come November, nobody's going to remember this, and it's not going to help him.
No, and obviously there's August recess, so not much going on. The polling numbers, we don't, you know, it's hard to really rely on polling numbers this time of year. But what are you thinking for the midterms? What are you, you know, what's your, you know, thought? Because obviously all of us knew the situation in Iran was not going to be over by the midterms. Everybody with half a brain cell knew that. What do you think it's going to portend for the midterms?
in terms of how, well, first of all, I think it's going to be very difficult for this president. I think it's going to be very, I don't see the Republicans doing well. I do think they keep the Senate. I think they lose the House. I think the White House seems to know that by the number of people that have been leaving. I think one of the reasons why Caroline Leavitt left is they want to bring somebody in there with some kind of legal experience who can sort of talk about the subpoenas, likely the impeachment that will come if the Democrats take the House. And I think they wanted somebody out there with more of a legal mind to try to, or legal background, I should say, to try to explain some of these things.
Really? That's important. Yeah. Wait, I don't want to step away from that. This is important, Jeff, because yeah. I hadn't thought about this. Sure. We're talking with Jeff Murdoch, White House correspondent for The Washington Times. I'm Heidi Harris, in for Mark. I had not thought about that. So I just thought Caroline was stepping away because she wanted to be a mom to her children, which is fantastic. I champion that. It's wonderful. But you think Trump wanted to bring in somebody as the press secretary who would have more of a legal mind when it comes to this kind of thing? I hadn't thought about that.
I think that's part of it. I think she did want to step away and be with her family. But I also think it looks like if you look at this administration, for example, James Braid, the legislative director, he left today. He's going to be leaving in September. He's the chief White House liaison to Congress, and he's getting out. And you see these departures, and they start to add up, and they start to show a pattern of people kind of leaving before the midterm and a different switch. And it looks like they're trying to get in somebody who's going to be more of an attack dog with Congress because they're going to have a much more hostile Congress. But back to Caroline, Elena Aba is widely considered to be the favorite of to be the press secretary. She was, she's got a legal mind, a legal background. At one point, the president tried to make her the U.S. attorney that went through a whole legal process. She is, as we were talking about earlier, the president likes pretty things. She's an attractive woman. She seems to be the favorite. And I have to believe part of that is why she is the favorite.
Well, I thought I saw something today, and you're on top of this more than I am, but I thought I saw something today where she said, I don't want it. I could be wrong.
Well, yes. And in Washington, though, everybody says they don't want it.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything, right?
That doesn't. Yeah, I've learned that. So many people I've written stories, they don't want it. And then a week later, they got the job. So.
Right. They're just holding out for more money or whatever, their better terms or whatever it might be. Interesting. Okay, that makes sense. That makes absolute sense. You're not going to get the truth. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because Caroline, oh my gosh, she was amazing. I mean, God bless her. She was so rapid fire and just unflappable, and that is really tough.
The thing that I don't think she ever got enough credit for was her willingness to move around the briefing room and go to outlets that don't traditionally get called on. And I don't think she ever got the credit she deserved for that. I went through all 4 years of Joe Biden's administration. I could tell you which outlet they were going to go to first, which outlet they were going to go to second, which outlet they were going to go third. You cannot do that with Caroline. She moves around the room. She doesn't seem like she has a planned strategy of calling on people's favorites. She'll call on people, and she'll give people a chance who have not traditionally get called on in the room. And I think that should be more of her legacy than it has been, at least so far when people have been talking about it.
Are you going to go on the record here, Jeff Murdoch, and say that Caroline Leavitt did not get enough credit for how great she was? Is that what you're going to say? Because that's...
I didn't say how great she was. I just said for calling on people, and I'm going to...
Right, but she was great. That's my point. I mean, we've all watched these people, the people who worked for Biden. I mean, they stumble, they bumble. I mean, she was boom, 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 boom. And at 28 years old, I mean, it's to me, she had so much on the ball. Incredible.
Well, you know, but one thing I thought was always interesting is, you know, sitting through those Karine Jean-Pierre briefings, is she could give Lane Kiflin lessons in how to run out the clock. there was always these long-winded answers.
Right.
There were always these, you know, pauses. And it was really like she was trying to get to that 45-minute mark so she could just declare it as it. Whereas you point out, Caroline, boom, 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 boom. She's going to sit there and get as many people in as she can in that 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she was incredible. I didn't realize they had a time limit on it, but I'm, as you were talking, I was thinking about all the years I've done radio, and you get politicians on and talk about running the clock out. They know exactly how much time you have. And they, and depending on who the politicians are, I mean, I've interviewed Governor Kehoe, people like that who are great, to Josh Hawley, people like that are great to have on, and they actually give you answers. But there are a lot of them who will not ever come to the point, and they'll run the clock out. Drives you crazy.
Yeah, 100%. I hope I'm not doing that on the phone with you today.
You are not. You are excellent and concise because you know what you're doing. But you know what I'm talking about with politicians. They will dance around it. They'll do everything except answer the question. Oops, out of time. They know what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. They'll begin it with, well, thank you for, excuse me. Thank you for that question. I appreciate you asking me that question. It's a good question.
Right. And there goes 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
That is true. So we don't really know. You said you think they're going to lose the House, but they'll keep the Senate. So it's just hard to know because no one really pays attention, really, until after Labor Day, for the most part.
That's true. And keep in mind, Trump and Republicans tend to underpoll because of, you know, there's sort of a stigma, as you're aware of, when people identify themselves in polls as conservatives or Trump supporters. So they tend to not say that. So I always find Republicans, especially Trump, always tends to underpoll than what we see with than what we see when the results come out. So I think that's also a factor. But, you know, we're having this conversation here in late August. We still have all of September. We still have all of October. We still have a part of November. So a lot can change.
Right. Now, final question here, when we're talking about the polls and all that kind of stuff, when it comes to people coming back from obviously from the break and this and that, I totally lost my train of thought. I was going to ask you something so important. I don't write my questions down. This is why. Oh, I know what it was. I was going to mention the this week there were some losses for the Freedom Caucus people. And there are some people saying, well, Trump, you know, he's lost his edge. People he has supported don't necessarily win now. What do you say to that, Jeff Murdoch?
I say look at Florida.
Hey, y'all. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze. Let's love.
I thought, you know, his record in Florida was particularly strong. You look at some of these other, his record of endorsements, they've been particularly strong. I would have to disagree with that based on some of the recent results we've seen.
Yeah, well, that's good stuff. I mean, and I, hopefully we'll, you and I'll get out for coffee now that you're in Vegas, my hometown. I'm glad to have you in Vegas. We need clear thinking people in this town. Lord knows.
Absolutely. Reach out to me. I'm always happy to get coffee.
Absolutely. That'll be great. Jeff Murdoch, White House correspondent, Washington Times. I'm Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon. I'm Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon. I'm not into this. Are any of you folks here this evening? We got Ethan. We got Fred. We got Sue. Anybody into these fancy schmancy Lego sets? Anybody? Nobody? I don't even understand it. I have a friend who actually puts those together for fun. Like things that are, that look like spaceships and all these kinds of things. And apparently it's a big deal. I don't know anything about that world. I've seen some of them and look complicated. That's the last thing I would find relaxing, but that's me. Anyway, the reason I mention this is because there was a vehicle found in California, in Southern California, that had Lego sets worth nearly $30,000 in the car. Lego sets. 30,000. Who knew that this? I don't understand these new ones at all. I don't even get it. Don't understand it. All right. Let me mention this because I think this is a kind of a big deal and it hasn't been talked about as much as it should. Carmelo Anthony is that teenager who killed the 17-year-old athlete at a high school track meet. Remember that whole story? And he's been sentenced. Now he gets a new trial, apparently. But what's interesting to me is the reason they're giving him a new trial, apparently, is because the judge, they're asking for the judge to be removed, but he did a TV interview in which he said jurors got it right when they delivered a guilty verdict. Well, as a judge, I mean, you're entitled to have an opinion on a case that's already been adjudicated. you have to listen to it fairly, and you have to make sure both sides are represented and everyone's rights are protected. But the idea that you're not going to have an opinion is crazy. Shameless plug, I'll put it out there. I'm doing a new podcast called Vegas Crime Files. And you can find that on the Odyssey app or anywhere you get podcasts. Vegas Crime Files, all firsthand accounts of things that have happened. And I was talking to the latest podcast coming out next week is going to be about a woman in Vegas we call the Black Widow of Vegas, because she killed her fancy schmancy real estate developer husband. He knew she was going to do it. He suspected she was going to do it. And she ultimately did it. And then she went on the lam, and America's Most Wanted profiled her a bunch of times, the most of any female murderer at that time. And ultimately they caught her, and you'll have to just listen to the podcast for the whole thing. But the judge actually said, this judge was quite a character in Vegas. He was a real, I don't mean in a bad way, just quite a character on the bench. And he actually said, after listening to all the evidence, which you will hear in the next podcast, all the evidence, he said, well, it could have gone either way. Huh? What? Could have gone either way? I mean, they had so much evidence against her. It was crazy. And it all fit together. You don't have to get a confession to have a case that's solid, right? But anyway, the reason I mentioned that is in the case of this Carmelo Anthony, this kid who's supposed to go to, who's sentenced to 35 years in prison. But for the judge to say that the jurors got it right when they delivered the guilty verdict, well, you're entitled to have an opinion. The trial's over. You're entitled to have an opinion. Because sometimes the jurors don't get it right. And you have to sit back as the judge. And I'm sure, I mean, let's be honest, 50% of the time in a courthouse, people aren't happy. 50% of the people who walk out of courthouses are not happy every single day. 50%. Somebody didn't get what they wanted. And the judge is going to have an opinion. And sometimes it's open and shut in the judge's mind, but he or she still has to make sure everybody has, you know, gets their rights protected and all that, and all the evidence is presented. Because the last thing a judge wants is to have a case go to trial and something comes back and then they decide that they're going to overturn it. I was almost seated a few years back on a child molestation case. And I have put on Facebook in the past that I believe child molesters should be thrown over Hoover Dam. I stand by that, by the way. And so they found that on my Facebook page, the lawyers. Now, that doesn't mean that I can't be completely fair in evaluating somebody sitting in the courtroom, because everybody in the courtroom is presumed innocent until proven guilty. That's the way you have to approach it as a juror. Now, there are a lot of prosecutors who will say, listen, there are so many cases that we plead out and this and that. By the time somebody gets to that defendant's table, they're guilty. Well, okay, you may think that, but as a juror, I'm not allowed to think that, because there are people who are falsely prosecuted. We all know that. Falsely convicted, we know that too. And they had seen what I had written on Facebook about child molesters. Now, I would have absolutely not had any preconceived notions about this defendant. I would have listened to the evidence objectively and fairly, because people do lie about sexual assault, even children. So I would have, but the reason they didn't wind up keeping me on the jury is because they were concerned, the guy was convicted ultimately, they were concerned that if the guy got convicted, the other side would go, yeah, but she, you know, she's a talk show host. And yeah, and she put the stuff on her Facebook page about how child molesters should be thrown over Hoover Dam and blah, blah, blah. Well, that would be subject to appeal. Of course it would. The fact that I have strong feelings about child molesters doesn't mean that I couldn't objectively listen to a case and listen to the evidence, because of course I could. I was almost on another jury trial where this young man, some kids in Vegas, some rich white kids, kind of formed a gang, and they were terrorizing neighborhoods, and they were throwing rocks through windshields of cars, and they threw a very large rock through the windshield. Someone threw a large rock through the windshield of the car, and this child who was 16 years old was disfigured as a result. Terrible, terrible thing. So the kid goes to trial, and they asked me on the stand, they said, have you ever talked about this case? And I said, no, I've talked about his associates. And I was real careful not to use the word gang, even though they called themselves that. I didn't want to use that word because I didn't want to prejudice anybody else who was sitting there as a potential juror. And I said, I've talked about his associates, but I've never talked about him, because they had kept his name out of the papers. And ultimately, they didn't keep me on the jury. Same reason, probably because of what I do for a living, which is fine. But there was a woman a couple of seats away from me, and they said, can you be fair in judging this case? And the woman said, no. And they said, why not? She goes, I just feel so sorry for that little boy. And I thought, ma'am, I feel sorry. Everyone sitting here feels sorry for that little boy who's been disfigured. But that doesn't mean that other little boy who was, this kid was 16 or 17, the defendant, that doesn't mean he did it. I mean, some people, she couldn't get past it. I feel so, well, the fact that you feel sorry for someone doesn't mean you convict whoever's sitting at the defendant's table. You've got to listen to the evidence. It was shocking, frankly. I guess I shouldn't be shocked because some people cannot put that aside. You feel that's how they win when they go to, they have a medical malpractice or whatever. They always go to the jury because the jury, oh, they bring them in a wheelchair. And regardless of who's at fault, somebody's going to pay, right? That's what the medical malpractice attorneys count on. They count on people's emotions. They feel so bad. Doesn't matter who actually is responsible. They go to whoever the company is that they can kind of tie to this situation. And that's where they get the money. Everyone knows how that works. But they always go to the jury because the jury can be easily swayed by emotion. And they know that. So anyway, now, we all want fair juries and it's hard to get one. That's for sure. I'm Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.
I'm Harris, in for Mark Reardon. California can't get any weirder. Candace D. Malloy is here, senior fellow at the Energy and Environment Legal Institute, former Trump EPA transition team member, author of several books I've read. Good to talk to you again. It's been a while since we talked. I don't expect you to remember me, but I'm glad to have you on the Mark Reardon Show, Steve.
Thanks for having me back, Heidi.
You know what's so interesting? As I'm looking at this information about California trying to decide what kind of tires you can have on your car and prevent you from getting the other ones. Listen, I know what it's like to be young, have no money, and drive on retreads. And that's what I did when I was young. And I would drive on the retread, and when it would blow out, I would get another $20 retread because that's what I could afford. And now California is trying to limit your ability to buy tires. Oh my gosh, Steve.
Well, so I guess I'm lucky to be talking to you at all. So California wants to mandate the type of tires you buy. The type of tire they want you to buy is a lot more expensive, maybe 50% or more expensive. And the reason they want you to buy these expensive tires is because they roll better than regular tires, meaning that you'll get better gas mileage and you'll save the planet from burning up and, you know, turning into, what is it, Al Gore? Calls the planet, a walk through the chapter of Revelations. This is stupid. I mean, you know, California could fall off the face of the earth. And, you know, even if it were true that greenhouse gas emissions were somehow affecting the climate, California just does not emit enough for that to matter. So the whole thing is just stupid. It's making people pay more for less. And I think it's actually unsafe because, you know, the way these tires work, they roll better because they're coated with something so there's less friction, I guess, on the road. Of course, how do you stop your car? With friction. So
that was what I was going to say. That might be more dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
But I mean, it's just typical California policy. And, I don't know what the way out for California is. Even if Steve Hilton wins in November, the California General Assembly is 3-1 Democrats and the Senate is 2-1 Democrats. And so what would he inherit? He's going to inherit, Democrats.
I know, poor guy. We're speaking with Steve Malloy, a senior fellow at the Energy and Environment Legal. I always think of you as an author. That's the first thing I want to say. Energy and Environment Legal Institute. Glad to have you. Let me explain this. My husband's going to have to explain this to me later, slowly, all right? Apparently, the new tires have a maximum rolling resistance of 9.1 newtons per kilonewton. I don't even know what that means, Steve. Can you explain that to me slowly?
Well, it just means they roll. They have a longer roll. You know, the same force.
Okay.
They roll longer, and so that'll you know, may slightly improve your gas mileage. But of course, you're going to blow all the saved, you know, gas mileage savings buying the tires and then fixing your car after you have an accident. So the whole thing is crazy, and it's all for nothing. It's not going to improve the weather, the climate, anything. It's just, you know, making life more expensive for people that live in California. And then you have to hope that these stupid policies don't get exported out of California into the rest of, you know, the country.
You know, in 2008, when Obama was doing the cash for clunkers thing and throwing all of these perfectly good SUVs that were a little older into the landfill, I have a friend who owns a couple of car dealerships in Arizona, and his client, they're used car dealerships, and he's not selling cars to wealthy people. He's selling cars to average people. And he said, I'm having a very difficult time getting a hold of cars. He said, my average client is a family. They've got a couple of kids and they can't afford a new SUV. They want the older ones. That's all they can afford. And so, once again, you're always putting the squeeze on the people who don't have a lot of money. And of course, they would buy a brand new fancy schmancy car if they could afford it, probably, but they can't. So they're the ones who always suffer.
Right. So when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, a family owned a car for an average of about 5 years. Now it's 12 years. Because cars are so much more expensive. So
interesting.
We force people to drive older, less safe cars, for many foolish reasons, higher gas mileage, a lot. Some of the safety stuff is not needed. But, you know, these pointlessly expensive tires, it's just ridiculous. And so no one can afford cars anymore. And then you have inflation and gas prices. And of course, the left doesn't care because they don't want you in your car to start with.
That is true. And of course, let's be honest. Can we just be honest here, Steve Malloy? California would be Haiti if it weren't for the federal government, the way they run their state.
California
right?
would be Haiti. Look, Gavin Newsom has chased the oil industry or is chasing the oil industry out of California. But he realizes that California is still going to need gasoline. And so he's thinking that maybe the state can buy the refineries and have state workers working in the refineries. What could go wrong with that?
Well, that's it. And when you look at the, and this is kind of a regional thing, but I know you're paying attention to this. You know, they're fighting over the Colorado River, and Nevada recycles 85% of its water. California does like 20%, and they're going to cut back on Nevada's water. Because the reason I make the Haiti joke is because if California had to rely and completely rely on their own policies with no help from the federal government, that's why I compare them to Haiti. So, but they don't save water. They don't have desalination plants. They don't do any of this stuff because of whatever environmental nonsense. And they're going to keep cutting everyone else's water because they won't make the right decisions when Nevada is doing a great job with the water and they're going to be penalized. I mean, this is what happens.
California, you know, they got that whole ocean to the left of them, and there's, you know, painfully few desalination plants there. They could take a lot of pressure off the Colorado River. They don't want to do that. California has all this wind and solar power. When the wind and solar is not there, then they have to, you know, drain the coal power from the rest of the West. They even have this problem in Southern California, where Mexico is dumping 50 million gallons of raw sewage a day into Southern California. And nobody seems to be able to do about it. Gavin Newsom, he's not even close to taking care of that.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing, is that the environmental things that they propose hurt people and don't really help the environment at the end of the day. And meanwhile, they've got these, you know, crowded freeways in California where they really don't have any way to make them any wider. And that's where a lot of their pollution is coming from. And it's funny, too, if you see the old 60s, late 60s, early 70s cop shows, you know, Chips, or you watch Columbo, you see the city. Adam 12, and you see the city's just as socked in with pollution then as it is now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, you know, Southern California has made tremendous strides in cleaning up its air, but, you know, because of the geography, it's still going to have bad air days. You know, when the Spanish conquistadors sailed by in the 15th century, they noticed that there was haze over Los Angeles, even though there were no people there. It's just a natural. And of course, when you dump, you know, 20 million people in there driving cars, you know, if the wind doesn't blow, yeah, the air is going to be bad. What's the big surprise? It doesn't, you know, what it means is that people need to live elsewhere. You know, we don't need to make life so expensive for people there that no one can afford it.
Well, they have a high-speed train coming any day now, don't they, Steve?
Yeah, it probably only cost $1 trillion if they ever get it done. No,
everyone's lost track.
State, well, this is what I'm saying. You know, so even if Steve Hilton wins and becomes Governor Hilton, he's still going to have Democrats in the Assembly and in the Senate, and nothing's going to get done. It's going to be, you know, just like when Schwarzenegger was there, he couldn't get anything done.
Right. And you know, for the people who are listening right now from Missouri and Illinois who might say, I don't care about California, they suck, who cares? Well, to your point that you made earlier in this conversation, what happens in California tends to leak over into other states. That's the problem.
Definitely Illinois. and definitely the blue states like Illinois. Maybe you stop in Missouri, but Illinois, watch out.
Well, that's the problem. The bad ideas tend to just generate from there and spread around the country in all the blue states. And the next thing you know, everyone's like, yeah. And of course, the people who make the money off the tires, you know, they're going to push this. And we all know what goes on behind the scenes. And at the end of the day, the air's not going to be one bit cleaner.
Yeah, no. And who knows where these tires are made. Eventually, they'll all have to be made in China. And do we really want to be doing that? No. I don't know what the solution to this is. It's just we live in a mad society. Mad, mad, mad.
Well, it is. And I don't know if they think it's going to make it better or they. There are two kinds of people. There are the ones who don't care if it's going to be effective. They just want to have this dream of something. And they're the ones who know, and the other ones who know it's not going to be effective and still push it because it benefits them financially.
Well, yeah, I've got to say that, you know, there's probably a lot of lobbying. You know, you get rules like this because of the corruption, right?
California
is a corrupt place. And so that's what's getting these tires in. And of course, it's the regular people that pay the bill, and then they go ahead and vote for Democrats. And, you know, it's just.
That's right.
And they have no choice.
Yeah, make them buy my tires, make them buy my light bulbs, whatever else, or make them buy my washing machine or my refrigerator, none of which last anywhere near as long as they used to, and on and on and on. And somebody behind the scenes is making a fortune off of it. As always, it never helps the environment. But anyway, thanks for being here, Steve Malloy. And by the way, should I mention your website, junkscience.com?
You can, and you can find me on X at junkscience.
Okay, junkscience.com. All right, thank you, Steve Malloy. Great talking to you again. Appreciate you being here at the Mark Reardon Show. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Because it's always somebody benefiting behind the scenes. It's not the environment. It's not the people. And I can joke about it. I'm serious about the retreads. When I was young and had no money and drove an old car, I mean, I did drive on the highway with retreads, but I would drive around town with the retreads. And if you're not going that fast, okay, the tire blow out, then I go buy another $20 tire because that's what I could afford. Nothing wrong with retreads. But, you know, they act like everybody's got money for all these new tires and fancy this and fancy that. Everyone doesn't have the money and they don't care because it's their vision. It's going to make everybody broke. I'm telling you, California would be Haiti if it weren't for the federal government bailing them out. I'm Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon. I'm Heidi Harris in for Mark Reardon. He'll be returning on Monday. He's out at the golf course. I mean, I could lie to you, but it's the truth. And y'all know that because he was talking about it yesterday on his show. He's out there hanging out. It's a big deal. Having this wonderful golf tournament in town. So he's enjoying that thoroughly. Here is the clip of the day. This is Gavin Newsom, who would love to be our next president.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Would you be a good president?
We'll see. I don't know.
But what do you think you would?
That's a difficult question to answer. I mean, so I have no idea. I would like to think I would be, but that's for others to determine. By the way, I think I was a pretty good mayor. I think I was pretty good, but people have different opinions, so I'm not naive about it.
Wow. Okay, first of all, where do I start with Gavin Newsom? And once again, if you're listening in Missouri and Illinois, you go, why do I care about the guy with the hair? And you don't. And I get it. But he wants to be our next president. He's not going away on the national stage. He's just not. And even if you don't want to be in political office, a higher political office, if somebody asks you, would you be a good president? You might say, well, yeah, I'd probably be good at that. I may not want to do it, but I could probably do it. you know, he wants to be the president. He wants the power. Can you imagine? I mean, to me, Gavin Newsom will be like hitting fish in a barrel to try to get rid of him. I mean, honestly, because all you have to do is show videos of California, put that on the, you know, anywhere, YouTube, wherever you put video, you know, your ads now, run your TV ads, whatever you do, and run these ads and say, do you want America to look like this? It's real simple. This is the easiest guy in the world to get rid of, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. Because even the craziest liberal who wants to step over, does not want to step over poop every single morning going to their office, which is what you do in San Francisco and places like that, because their policies are garbage. I mean, it's just frightening, some of the things that they want to do or don't do. You know, they don't want to prosecute crime, and they want to, you know, coddle all these homeless people. And homeless people, by the way, are human beings, and nobody's ever said they're not. And they are deserving of our compassion and our help. But where does the help end and the tough love begin? That's the question. It's always the question. The other day, I was in my town of Vegas, and they had one of our brave police officers was killed by some loser. And they started the procession from the funeral home. And I went over there to watch the procession and videotape it to put it on my Facebook page, Heidi Harris Show. And there was a homeless guy walking by. He was about 10, 15 feet away from me. And he said, what's going on? Because there were cop cars everywhere, hundreds of cop cars. And I walked over to him to talk to him. And poor guy, his eyes are all bloodshot and everything. I don't know what his situation is. And I said, there's, you know, and some people might recoil at somebody like that. I won't. And he didn't look harmful. He just was, you know, homeless guy, clearly homeless. And I said, well, police officer was shot. And he says, oh, that's terrible. And I said, yeah, I mean, part of me wanted to say, can I help you? Can I do anything for you? Why are you in the situation you're in? Can I help you? Can I, you know, you want to take him somewhere, give him a shower and a change of clothes and turn his life around? From the compassionate point of view, of course I feel that way. I don't understand why people want to live outdoors and be dirty. I don't understand that at all. But there are people who do. And they want to live outside and they don't want to be told what to do or where to show up. And they don't mind living out in the dirt because that's where their friends are. So how do you sort those people out? I mean, you've got to have an intelligent policy. California does not. They want to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on these people, more than that, on homeless people, and they're not helping them. They're giving them housing first without actually addressing the problems. Most of the people who are out there have an addiction issue. And many of these people, if you talk to them, and it breaks my heart, but it's the truth, many of these people, when you talk to them, wind up on the streets, started out in a tough situation at home. Little kids, abuse, neglect, and then it just spiraled from there. And I'm not saying that you are not in charge of your own life, because you are. You have to make the right decisions no matter what you came from. But it's hard. And they're dealing with that. And sometimes they self-medicate because they're dealing with pain from the past and all that. But they don't want to deal with that in California. They just want to give everybody everything. Give them money, give them this, give them that. Let them poop anywhere they want to. Let them sleep anywhere they want to. No regard for personal rights or property rights or, you know, and that's all you have to do. All the RNC is going to have to do is show all of these tents and RVs and all this stuff parked everywhere and say, is this what you want the entire country to look like? Because this is what the country would look like under Gavin Newsom. And that should be easy. I mean, it's stunning that anybody would consider this guy. And then I saw a poll the other day that AOC is actually looking like the front runner. Oh my gosh. I would love to see AOC and Marco Rubio on a stage together, or AOC and, you know, Vice President Vance on a stage having a debate. Either one of them. That wouldn't even be fair, would it? Not even a fair fight. But there are people who voted for Kamala Harris who can't finish a sentence still. So I don't understand it. I don't know why. It's not because she's a liberal. I mean, Hillary Clinton's not stupid. She's a liberal, but she's not stupid. Kamala Harris, you know, my gosh, you couldn't talk her out of a paper bag and people voted for her. Go figure. All right, guys. I'm Heidi Harrison for Mark Reardon. I will see you tomorrow. Everybody have a great night. You can follow me on all the socials. Heidi Harris Show.
Get more at 971talk.com.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts.